You know, the desert is filled with a variety of plants and wildlife, some of which happen to have a slithery reputation that precedes them. Yep, I'm talking about snakes, and Arizona does have a lot of them. It's a fact of life here in the desert that honestly freaks a lot of people out. Polls and surveys have shown time and again that snakes top the list of Americans' fears, outranking other common phobias like public speaking, heights, spiders, and more. How can we as desert dwellers and outdoor enthusiasts go about sharing Arizona with these awesome reptiles? Well, stick around as we talk with Caitlin Garcia and Kale Morris from the Phoenix Herpetological Sanctuary to help us separate the scaly facts from the scary fiction.
Happy World Turtle Day.
It is Turtle Day.
Yeah.
We just did a news segment yesterday about Turtle Day, so they're playing it sometime today.
Awesome. I figured that was probably a big deal for you guys.
Yeah, and it's funny, it's like World Turtle Day, World Gator Day, and I think one other one
World
is
Snake
like
Day.
Snake Day is all like within the few weeks of each other.
Oh, wow.
It's your Super Bowl.
It is. Time. Yeah.
That's awesome. What's your guys' favorite native turtle?
Native turtle. I really like the mud turtles. They're like oblong shaped. And they're
we posted a picture of one today.
Yes, they're so cute. I love them a lot.
Do they really smell?
That's mine too.
Oh, okay, yay.
It's the one that you can find around here that's native. And it's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, I posted a picture of a Sonora mud turtle.
Yeah.
But I was reading about them, and it's every source I found said that they have a stinky funk to them. Do they really
smell
bad? Yeah. I was smelly turtle.
Yeah, I've found them out in the wild because there's not very many water systems that have them anymore. But I always thought it was because they're covered in moss and
like the algae.
And they smell like that.
Yeah. Well, I figured it had to be related to that. The picture that a user had sent it in, the picture that we had, there was a lot of algae on that turtle's back. Okay, maybe that's the source of the stink.
Yeah. All right. Well, Caitlin and Kale, thank you so much for being with us today. Tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Sure. So my name is Caitlin Garcia. I am the Education and Outreach Director here at the Phoenix Herpetological Sanctuary. I started off as the lizard intern, and so I was a volunteer for a couple of years before I got hired. So in total, I've been here for about 8 years, but that's nothing compared to Kale.
Wow. So Kale, how long have you been with the society?
So, my name is Kale Morris, and I'm the venom manager here at PHS, and I've been working here for 19 years.
Oh, wow.
Mostly caring for the venomous collection.
Have you always been a fan of venomous snakes, and this is kind of like your dream job?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I caught my first snake when I was 5. Wasn't venomous. It was a garter snake, but I always wanted to work with venomous, and when I turned 18, my dad taught me how, because he had worked with them. So, yeah, I've always loved it. I love educating people about them. It's my favorite.
Yeah. We're excited for you to do that today. I know that snakes are either you're a love them or you're scared of them kind of topic. So it's going to be interesting to hear you break some myths and help us get more comfy with them because they're just a fact of life here in the desert. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, I'm really interested to hear that you started off as a volunteer. We constantly get asked at the state parks, how can I become a park ranger? How can I work in this field? And a lot of times our rangers say, oh, we started as a volunteer or an intern. And that was kind of your path into this field too.
100%. I am a huge advocate for volunteering. I tell any person that'll listen or that wants to get into the field about volunteering where you think you want to see yourself and seeing what it's actually like in that field. I did a lot of volunteering when I was young, and I actually was going to school for early childhood development. And my best friend got an internship here, and I was like, that's so cool. I'm going with you. So I kind of begged them to let me join her. And I just couldn't leave. I was like, this place is incredible, and I want to see it grow. And I've just stuck to it ever since then and tried to get people to follow that same path.
That's awesome. Like, when you find your niche, it's really easy just to kind of ride it out and enjoy every minute of it. Now, I'm sure, you know, for both of you, it's similar to Elizabeth and I. It doesn't actually seem like work when you're working.
For sure. I'm constantly working, but it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. Do you guys have a big staff of volunteers currently there? And is there like opportunities available for people to volunteer?
Yeah, we have our staff of about 18 or 19. And then our volunteers, I think, are at about 30 or 40 right now of active volunteers that come back every week. And then anyone 18 and up can apply on our website.
And that's something that, and that's amazing. But as I was researching you guys a little bit more before talking today, I realized that this is not a small operation that you guys are doing. It's like 2.5 acres, rescue and rehabilitation center. There's an on-site reptile clinic and a research center. I mean, you guys got all kinds of stuff and all those cool animals too.
For sure. We have a lot going on, and even more so now in the venom department with our new anti-venom bank.
Ooh, Kale, can you tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah. We have over 200 venomous snakes here at our facility. Jeez. And they're from all over the world, you know, king cobras, black mambas, and we maintain an anti-venom bank for all those exotic species. And so we have the largest anti-venom bank in the Western United States. The other really big one is in Florida. But yeah, we have anti-venom for everything all over the world.
That's amazing.
Just out of curiosity, you know, working with venomous snakes, has there ever been an incident?
So I get asked that a lot. People are like, oh, wow, you've been doing this for 19 years. Have you ever been bit? And I have not. But I also tell people I try really, really hard not to get bit. And then sometimes people will be like, well, duh, yeah. I see people on YouTube quite often that are clearly not trying really hard. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing really reckless things. But it's pretty easy to stay safe if you just follow the safety protocols.
That's actually very like encouraging for the person who might be a little fearful of hiking in the desert because of snakes. Mm-hmm. To hear that you've been working directly with them for 19 years and you've not been bit, like, okay, maybe there are things that we can do. Maybe this is a little bit more in our control than people think.
It is, without a doubt. It works the same as in the wild. These snakes are not aggressive, and they're not going to chase you like people think.
You know, that's interesting.
Stay safe.
It's interesting you say that, because I've had the opportunity to hold two different gopher snakes recently. One of them was a tame snake, and the other one was completely wild. That I just happened to be visiting Picacho, and they were there's this guy working on a federal grant to do some kind of snake study. Like, you want to hold it? And I'm like, well, it's wild, you know. He's like, oh no, she's an angel, and she was. And I was like, This is pretty crazy. They are just docile creatures just out there doing what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, what I was telling you when I was talking to you about doing this episode with you guys is that right now in particular, and we're recording this episode sort of mid to late May, is that we're seeing a lot of people on social media posting every day about snakes that they encounter on the trails here in Arizona. And actually our park rangers are sharing a lot of information about the snakes that they need to relocate into safer areas and tips about staying safe. So it just seems to be sort of a hot topic. Is there a particular time of year where we're seeing more snake activity here in Arizona than other seasons?
Yeah, for sure. So with snakes, it's all about temperature. So they're cold-blooded, and so they rely on the temperature of their environment to be stable. So when we start to get into, you know, high 70s, low 80s, that's when they're active. And so when we get into over 100 degrees during the really hot times, they transition to nighttime, because that's when it's that temperature. But yeah, we get most of our snake calls, the bulk of them, in April. So April and May, and it also correlates when we're hiking. So we're going to see them on the trails quite a bit in April and May.
That makes sense. More people are out during in April and May, so there's more people noticing that the snakes are there that may have been there all along until mm-hmm. they just happened upon them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's kind of like people, like, pretty soon here we're going to get too hot to be on the trail in the middle of the day. And they probably won't be either. So I suppose I would say this is something you don't need to worry about, but that's not actually true because people are going to be going out on the trail early in the morning or later in the day to try to avoid that heat. Same thing that those snakes might be doing.
Yep, for sure.
So what should people do if they're a little bit nervous about this? And we see that question all the time. I want to hike, but I'm a little scared of hitting the trail because I see that there are snakes here in Arizona.
You know, it's really easy to stay safe around rattlesnakes because they don't want anything to do with us. I like to tell people they're scaredy cats or chickens. That's how they act. They want to be left alone. They just want to do their thing. So if you find one on the trail, it's very easy to see it because their camouflage works really well when they're out in the desert. So the biggest and safest way is stay on the trail. And you know, you see a rattlesnake, just give it distance. You know, they're often just moving and you just stand there and wait and they'll move on. But yeah, people usually get hurt by doing really dumb things. You know, they try to pick it up and try to move it or try to kill it. Statistics tell us that a lot of people get bit trying to kill them. Oh. They just need to be left alone.
Okay, interesting. So you're saying the majority of snake bites that you're seeing, it's really from people who are not giving them their space.
Yep, for sure.
And how much space is enough space? Like if I see one on the trail, how far do I need to back up?
If you take one big step backwards, you're well out of their range. I mean, it's pretty easy. But I mean, you can view them from 10 feet away and that's really safe. And take good pictures, just watch them from a distance like that. And it's easy. So I also do field research. And I'm out in the desert quite a bit, you know, studying them in the wild. And it's just, I've been doing this for years and they're all the same. They just want to be left alone and there's no chasing, no aggression. It's just people, we're often taught that.
Yeah.
And so we fear something that really isn't something that we should be fearing like that.
Yeah, I think it's just human nature to fear something that can potentially kill you. But yeah. I mean, if you show a mutual respect, then it's going to be okay. You know, I've run into snakes quite a bit out there in the desert and even in the forest, but never had an incident and just able to watch them and learn from them and then move on. You know, you don't want to bug them too long, but yeah, they just want to do their thing.
Right. And it's very cultural too. You know, you watch movies and shows and there's never really a good snake character that you can find. They're usually depicted as the scary or mean character. And even when it comes to the non-venomous snakes, their teeth are so tiny, even getting bits, a couple of paper cuts, but people are more hesitant to pet a gopher snake versus like a dog, and those dogs have pretty sharp teeth. So, yeah. You know, not to make anyone afraid of dogs, but that animal can hurt you way more than a small gopher snake could.
That's so true, actually. My goodness. I used to work for an animal shelter back in the day, and I would never see the same kind of questions or fear surrounding a dog that you see around snakes. So since knowledge is power, and you tend to be less afraid of things that you understand, what are they doing out there? Maybe that in itself, if people could understand why they're out there, you know, they don't want to mess with you, but what are they doing? Let's unveil the world of a snake.
Sure. You know, with rattlesnakes, it's pretty easy to answer that because they're ambush hunters. And so the way that they go looking for food is they find an area where there's lots of rodents and they'll curl up in a little ball. It looks to me like a little cinnamon roll. They, yeah. They curl up and they'll put their head right on the edge of their coils and they just sit there under a bush and they'll wait for food to come by. So they don't go out chasing their food.
It's a pretty passive way of hunting, like out of all the wildlife to a way of hunting. That's a pretty docile way to hunt, actually.
Yeah. And they don't usually do that out in the open. you know, they don't do it right in the middle of a trail. It's usually up under things. And so they just want to kind of be left alone and do that. If you see them moving around, crossing a trail, they're usually going to find a spot to hunt.
Okay.
That's most of their activity.
And since the venom is such a scary part of snakes, maybe you can tell us about that, unveil that mystery. Why do they even need the venom? Why is that a thing?
Yeah, the venom is actually for their food. They need it to be able to hunt. So they don't constrict their food like gopher snakes do. So they just strike it. The rat will fall over and die. Sometimes it wanders off a little distance and the rattlesnakes will find them. They'll just go up and eat them. And so that venom is really important. It makes them excellent hunters. If they don't have that venom, like if they use it all in as a defense against predators, they won't be able to eat. So research shows that they actually use more venom. They inject more when they're hunting and less against a predator or against a human.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I didn't know that. That's
when it
awesome.
Comes to defense, they're really trying to do. Well, I would love to know when it comes to defense, what are their warning signs? Because I know they probably give some. And then when they do strike to defend themselves, they're not doing it as lethally as they are when they are trying to eat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think they want to strike us. That's what the rattle is. That rattling is an evolutionary mechanism that gives them an advantage to survive. So when they shake it, you know, they're trying to tell people just back up. So a lot of times people will hear rattlesnakes rattling here at our zoo and they go, oh, that rattlesnake is angry. He's mad. He's pissed. And I say, no, he's scared. And it's like a paradigm shift. They're like, oh, they just don't look at it like that. But that's what it is. They're just scared of us. We're big. We look like really big predators.
And what I also like to bring up about snakes in the wild is that they're gardeners, because everyone loves gardeners. So they're a really big part of the seed dispersal community in the wild. So they'll eat things like chipmunks that have seeds in their, you know, cheeks, and those seeds actually start to germinate inside the snakes. And then when the snakes go to the bathroom, it's a perfect place for those seeds to grow. So
that's convenient. Pretty awesome. Yeah.
You guys are making me like snakes. They're gardeners.
Yeah, some of our seeds won't even germinate unless they do that. They've got to go through the digestive system to get away the seed coat.
Between that and the fact that they kind of keep the rodent population in check, they're kind of important for our ecosystem. What are some other valuable aspects about snakes being part of nature here in Arizona that we should be really grateful for?
Well, we had a community here in North Scottsdale that called us years ago, and they said that they were being overrun with pack rats. They said that they've been killing all the snakes for years, and now they're just inundated. They said these rats were way worse than the snakes. They were chewing through wires, chewing through plumbing. They were building pack rat nests inside of car engines, so they couldn't even start their cars. And they actually asked us if we could release snakes back in their community.
Wow.
So we did a lot of education, and we did. We brought a bunch of gopher snakes. And they said after a few years, the rattlesnakes started coming back too. And we trained them how to remove the rattlesnakes. And so keeping them around here really helps. Most people don't realize how fast rodents reproduce and how much damage they can do, you know, not to mention diseases. So they definitely play a big role in the balance of our ecosystem here.
So don't kill them, or you might be sorry. You might have a big bad problem on your hands.
Yep.
Wow.
So besides rattlesnakes, like people that are out recreating in, let's say, a Sonoran Desert Park, what other snakes might they encounter on the trail?
So there's lots of rattles, or there's lots of snakes that they're going to encounter, and most of them are going to be non-venomous. We've already talked about a gopher snake. They're probably the most common one, but they do mimicry. Gopher snakes, they pretend to be rattlesnakes, so it confuses a lot of people. They'll shake their tail too, you know, in the leaves. It does sound kind of like a rattle, but you're going to see stuff like king snakes, pretty common. We have stuff called a long nose snake. Some people call coach whips like a red racer because they're red, but coach whips are just a really long, fast snake that you'll see cruising around looking for lizards.
Saw one of those at Catalina a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. There's lots, and most of them are just going to be cruising by and not even paying attention to you.
Yeah, it's cool that we have so many different varieties here. It's it just kind of adds to the awesomeness of Arizona that we have so many different things that we can enjoy.
Yeah, we have about 13 different rattlesnake species in Arizona out of the about 32 that's in the entire world. So they're all very unique. And there's a really good website called reptilesofaz.org. And that one's cool because it'll show you all the different patterns of the different snakes. So you can kind of ID the one that you might have seen. We link it on our website too. And a lot of people use that.
Awesome. I was just about to ask you, there are people who actually would enjoy going out into the field and trying to learn about the snakes and try to identify them. People do this with birds and they also do it with reptiles. So can you tell us a little bit, if someone's interested in getting into this, it's called field herping, what would they do to get involved or maybe start learning to ID the different reptiles in Arizona?
So yeah, I know that birding, it's really, really popular. And we're seeing this with herping, that we get lots of requests from people from all over the world that will call us and say, hey, you know, we're coming here. Could we go out? And I've personally taken a lot of people out in the desert doing this. And it is pretty easy because reptiles, you can often photograph them easily. You know, they'll just sit there, like especially lizards. And even with your cell phone. And yeah, that website is such a good resource. Because you can easily identify them based on their patterns.
Sure. So maybe just take a picture and then you can check against that website to try to ID them after your visit.
Yeah.
Speaking of lizards, this is just something funny that I've noticed as a hiker. When you're taking a picture, sometimes they'll be doing this push-up thing. Can you tell us about the lizard push-up? I mean, they're not just building muscle and working out, are they? What are they doing?
I just say that they're trying to be the macho lizard and tell you like, hey, this is my territory. I'm a better lizard than you are. Get out of here.
Oh, man. So it is a bit of like a macho workout thing.
There you go.
That's too funny. Yeah, okay. Talk. Sorry. I was curious about that. Too cool. I love it.
Arizona is heating up, and with temperatures rising, Arizona State Parks and Trails wants you to remember to be safe and smart in the outdoors this summer. Check the forecast before you head out for your adventure. If it's looking toasty out there, try heading out early in the morning or later in the evening, or set your sights on higher elevation destinations. Always bring more water than you think you'll need, and if you are hiking or biking, turn around before you get halfway through your water supply. Bring a hat and sun protection, and leave your pets at home when the temperatures rise. Don't let your fun day turn into a heat-related emergency. And with the weather warming, vegetation is drying out and can easily catch a flame. Remember to check the area you're recreating in for fire restrictions and practice fire safety, like making sure your tow chains are secured and not dragging on the ground, creating sparks. And make sure your campfire is dead out. Drown it with water and stir it with a stick or shovel, repeating the process until it's cool to the touch. Help us protect our beautiful state while enjoying all of the adventure that Arizona has to offer. Get more information at ezstateparks.com/fire.
Okay, so we've talked about the snakes and how they're beneficial, the different kinds of snakes in Arizona, what hikers should do to, you know, respect snakes when they're out there on the trail. Say again, because knowledge is power, I think a lot of the fear is, well, but what do I do if I do get bit? Am I going to die? Like, what should people do if the worst happens? Just so that they have that peace of mind in the back of their head of, if this does happen, I know what to do.
Yeah. So we get asked that a lot, and, you know, for good reason, because rattlesnakes, if they do bite you, it is a life and death situation. It's really rare to die from a rattlesnake, less than 1% of bites end in death, because antivenom is really effective. And so it's just very, very simple. If you ever get bit, you just got to get to the hospital. There's nothing that you can do in the field. You know, capturing the snake is bad. They don't need to know what snake it is. There's only one antivenom for all of the rattlesnakes. And so you just get to the hospital and they treat the symptoms. So really the only thing that we recommend, and this is what, you know, Banner Poison Center recommends too, is you take off rings or watches, jewelry, and you keep the person calm and you get to the hospital.
So can we bust a Hollywood myth? You shouldn't pull out a sharp knife and try to cut an X on it. And stick out the bone. This is not what you want people to do. Yeah. Don't do that.
So, yeah, most people today realize that that doesn't work. But Banner Poison Control told us that they had somebody come in last year that did that. They had cut with the razor blade two X's, and they had attempted to suck it out, and it doesn't work.
And the toxicologist that we work with told us that the only time that she sees a venomous snake bite get infected is when people put their mouths on it, because our mouths are not clean. Yes. So don't put your mouth on it and you'll have a much better time, you know, at the hospital, because you don't have to deal with anti-venom and an infection.
Right. What about people who think, oh, I should treat it like a wound or like a laceration that's bleeding, and I'm going to take a bandana and like tie it over. This is a no as well.
No. Yep. I like to say, if you're like my age or older, everything you were taught as a kid was wrong. Like, 'cause I was taught this in Boy Scouts and it's just not right. So we don't do those things anymore. Yeah. Tourniquets, restricting it is bad.
Cold, not good. Yeah.
I remember they used to sell snake bite kits that came with like this suction thing and there was stuff inside it. So those people were just making a bunch of money off of uninformed people.
I know. It's so sad.
So there is a one that's still sold. I see it in Walmart. It's called the Extractor. It says on it, proven to take out venom. And so people still think it's a mechanical suction device, but that was studied scientifically. And they found that the venom that it was pulling in there was on the surface. So if you just take a bottle of water and rinse off the venom, because you'll have it on the surface of the bite, that's it. Once those muscles collapse in on each other right after the fangs, you can't get anything out.
It's shut off. Yeah.
So there's no, it actually does more damage to the tissue when you're putting a suction device on it.
The Extractor blocked me on Facebook. I'm not allowed on their page anymore.
Like, we don't like you educating people. Okay. We're trying to turn a profit. Stop making people smart consumers. Okay. So don't fall for the hype. Forget those old Western cinema myths and just stay calm, remove things that might be restricting, like your rings or watches, and just get some medical attention right away.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Knowledge is power, people. It's not going to happen, but if it does, you know what to do now. That's great. Okay. Are there any snakes in Arizona? We talked about how beneficial they are. Are there any snakes that we are in danger of losing here in Arizona? Are there any endangered snakes?
Yeah. So we have three snakes that are on the endangered species list. Two of them are garter snakes and one of them is a rattlesnake. So it's the Mexican garter snake and the narrow-headed garter snake. They're just, populations are declining pretty rapidly. So they're listed as threatened. And then there is a rattlesnake called the New Mexican Ridgenose rattlesnake. And it occurs in extreme southeast Arizona and into New Mexico. And that's listed as threatened too.
Darn, that's sad, because we know that we need these snakes around. Is there anything that people can do to help?
I think that what we're doing here, you know, education is the best, because some people, we hear all the time, the best snake is a dead snake. And we're like, ugh, you know, people just don't understand and they think they're helping by killing them, but it doesn't. It makes it so much worse. And so some of the reasons why our snakes are threatened is because people are either killing them, or with the garter snakes, it's because of invasive species have been introduced. So, you know, just caring about our environment.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah. Anything about habitat protection that we can do as recreators outside?
Yeah, I think when people care about the environment, it goes a long way, you know, and there's so much we can do. Like, before the narrow-headed garter snake was listed, the Game and Fish Department contacted us and said they wanted to collect some and be able to get them into captivity and try to breed them so we can help. And so we did a joint effort with the Phoenix Zoo, and we caught several of them. And the Phoenix Zoo has been successfully breeding them for the last few years. Releasing them. So supporting, you know, zoos and facilities like ours help in the conservation of these species. I'm doing a project right now with PHS where we're going to be radio tracking rattlesnakes. And so it's a conservation effort. We're trying to show people, like, you know, you're moving rattlesnakes is the best way to do it instead of killing them. And so we're working on a program that's going to be coming out in a few months where we're going to be taking people out in the desert that can see active field research with rattlesnakes.
That kind of makes me want to know, like, so how far does a rattlesnake go? Like throughout the, let's say over a year, is he going to live within a 100 square yard area, or is he going to live in a mile area?
It's about a kilometer, which is a little under a mile for the males. And the females are a little less, but yeah, they'll spend their whole life in that area, like a square kilometer. And they'll travel around and feed and eat and mate, and then they'll go back to their den every winter, the same day.
Wow. Yeah, cool. So if you're seeing one in like your backyard or something, and you've lived there for a while, you've never seen one before, chances are maybe that's not where it regularly is.
Yeah, it isn't. They don't. Research shows that relocating them is effective. You know, I think they learn from the experience and they don't tend to come back. And that's what part of the research we're going to be doing here is just showing people that this is a good program, that it's better to relocate, learn to live with them safely, which is very easy, instead of killing them.
I really like that. That's a kinder approach. It's good for tender sensibilities, and it's also better for the environment and better for the snakes. So amazing. It always feels nice when you can be a small part of helping an issue like this. When you care and you don't know what to do, that's a really like helpless feeling. And so thank you for giving us very practical things that we can do to help.
Man, I've learned so much already during this podcast. I mean, I thought I knew quite a bit about snakes, you know. I mean, I don't consider myself a snake expert by any means, but I thought I knew quite a bit. But I, you know, so far this has been great, awesome and informative. And, you know, I get to play a part in this conversation, but I'm also learning so much, and I hope the listeners are too.
Definitely. Can people come and visit the Phoenix Herpetological Sanctuary?
Yes, definitely. Just like Kale said, and just like you guys are saying, the learning is so important, and seeing these animals up close and personal, obviously not too up close to the venomous stuff, but getting to see them really drives home that idea. And we have tours here, we do birthday parties, we bring animals off site. So it's not like the zoo where you could just show up and walk around. All of our tours are guided, so the people that are visiting get that animal knowledge and the stories of where these animals come from. So it is something that you have to make an appointment for, but we make it pretty easy on our website.
Yeah. And your website's great. And you have like birthday parties and something I noticed, there's virtual adoption. You know, people can adopt animals virtually. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because it seemed pretty cool. And then also, I'm curious, why not capybaras?
Of course. So our virtual adoption program is really awesome, especially for like our summer camp kids that come out here. They really love the animals here, but their parents don't want to have that responsibility at home. Instead, they can do the monthly donation and come out once a month to visit those animals, and they get that interaction time if it's a nice animal and non-venomous, of course. But we don't do the capybara because we have been so busy with capybara interactions. We just don't want to overwhelm them with another thing that they're doing. So that's why they're not really on the list. People can still like virtually adopt them, but the visitation wouldn't be really the same with those.
They just seem really cuddly, and I was a little disappointed.
I know. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
That's why they're getting so much attention.
I know. And yeah, and as you know, a sanctuary, we just want to make sure that we're not overusing those animals for those different, you know, interactions. So we'll keep it to the smaller group tours, because I'm sure that everyone and their grandmas would sign up for the virtual adoption for them if we allowed it.
This is such a great idea for our program, though, because like you were saying, a lot of our perceptions of these animals are set when we're quite young. They're from movies that we're watching. And so they're opinions that are formed over a lifetime from just consuming, you know, pop culture around us. And mm-hmm. so getting your kids here while they're young, that's a great idea. Start the education early so that mm-hmm. you're helping them view these messages that they're getting through the media with a more educated lens.
Yes, for sure. And we have some kids that come to camp all the way up till they age out of it. And then they volunteer in the camp, and then they volunteer here. And then they actually have hired a couple as camp counselors. So kind of that whole trajectory is amazing. And, you know, it's kind of what I had when I was younger, is watching Steve Irwin or Jeff Corwin and like, wow, this is so amazing. And when I moved to Arizona, being able to catch like whiptail lizards and that kind of stuff. And Kale reminds me a lot of my dad. We're very patient, very caring, very informative about the animals. And it just made the whole experience very, you know, like, wow, this is what our planet is about. And that is so important for the young kids, because they're the advocates for change. They are that catalyst. Because if a kid goes, hey, dad, pet this snake, and the dad's like, ooh, okay, fine. And then the dad's like, oh, all right, this is not a big deal. Or the mom, you know, that if I asked that person to do it, they would be a little bit more hesitant than, you know, listening to their child.
That's true. Parents can learn a lot from their kids.
You know, you guys mentioned that you worked with the Game and Fish Department on, you know, different projects. And I was just wondering about like the confiscations or escaped animals, any notable instances or experiences that you guys have had doing that, working with the Game and Fish Department?
Sure. Yeah. There's lots. I like to tell people that I could literally talk all day about this.
Really?
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, go for it.
A lot of our venomous snakes originally came to us, and the crocodiles and alligators, because they were confiscated. So before we were an entity, the Game and Fish had nowhere to put these things. It was very hard to place them. And some of the really dangerous stuff were euthanized, because that's what the, you know, the veterinarians recommended because of the danger level. And so when our founder, you know, we have three co-founders, but when Russ Johnson, our president, heard this, he's like, you know, we could help. We could take these in. And so we've had all kinds of crazy stories of people keeping, you know, cobras in their house. And the most amazing story, in my opinion, that has ever happened to us was getting a call from Arizona Game and Fish Department and telling us that there was an alligator that had been living in the Grand Canyon.
Oh,
and so this happened in 2005. And so we went, you know, to the Grand Canyon. It's actually the Grand Canyon Parashant National Monument, which is a part of the Grand Canyon that's on the west side. And a lot of people don't realize the demographics there, but the North Rim is Mojave Desert, and they have natural springs there. And so there is an alligator that was living there for 18 years.
Oh my gosh, man. 18 years?
Yeah. Wow.
And so we were, you know, commissioned to go capture it.
And was it big?
It was 8'3".
Nice.
And
oh no!
So it took quite a bit of work to capture him, and so he is on display here now, and we use him as an education tool.
His name is cool. Clem.
Yeah. Clem. Oh my!
Love Clem.
Which was awesome. Clementine, because they thought it was a girl, but they shortened it to Clem. To so Clem. His real name is Clementine, which I still call him. He gives me a side eye though.
Right, I'm sure.
He's our grumpiest alligator.
18 yeah, but, years of living in the okay.
But most
today was about dispelling fears, but now I have something.
I know. How many more alligators do we got out there?
So we found over 100 alligators in Arizona, you know, through different things, confiscations. We found them in golf courses where people have let them go in the lakes. And so, yeah, if we weren't here, I mean, it's really hard to deal with these. And so we keep them until the court cases are done. And then after that, we work with other zoos and we place them. And we keep some for education, like Clem.
So let's say somebody has an illegal pet at their house, like a cobra or a crocodile or alligator or whatever. And they can they just come in and surrender it to you guys without fear of repercussions? They just drop it off and take off?
So the Arizona Game and Fish Department has this rule, which, you know, they advertise and they have us advertise it, that if you have something illegal and you surrender it, there will be no consequences. So they're encouraging people to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But if you get caught with these animals, you will be, you know, punished to the full extent of the law. And so it's usually very, very large fines. And
yeah, so, I can imagine.
Yeah, but we've had people just drop off alligators. Some of them will say, "This isn't mine, it was my friend's."
Yeah, yeah. Sure, buddy.
Like, it's fine. Whatever you need to say, man. Just,
just give me the gator.
Yeah. We had a call from someone up north that was like, my brother or some family member went to jail and he has this snake in his apartment and we don't know what it was. And it was a gaboon viper. And so we had to get that, you know, so it's just all these different stories and circumstances. And like Kale said, we could talk about it all day. He definitely has some crazy stories that I'm always shocked to hear. Like, that's nuts.
Most I'm impressed interesting by stories award.
Yeah, that thing, 18 years living up there, that's pretty amazing. How old is that gator?
So it would be 37 years old now.
Whoa, wait a minute. Okay. How long do gators normally live? Because that's a lot 80, longer.
80 yeah. to 100.
Yeah, it's about the lifespan of a human, yeah.
Okay, so not the right choice in pet, first of all, illegal. Secondly, this is way longer of a commitment than you can manage.
Right, yeah. Same with tortoises.
I wanted to ask about that too, because, you know, invasive turtles, non-native introduced turtles, turtles are a common pet for people, but there's a lot of species that aren't native to Arizona. Why should they not just say they took it on, it's getting too much? Why is just letting it go not the right answer?
Yeah, so turtles are omnivores. So that means they can eat animal matter and plant matter. So they can pretty much eat a little bit of everything, and they will. We have a huge pond of red-eared slider turtles. We have over 200 of them in there. And during the summer, I call them our little piranhas, because anytime someone walks next to the pond, they're all swimming over like, you got food for me, you got food for me. So they can just like take out whole areas and completely just eat everything. And that doesn't leave any space or food for our native species.
We saw that on the Verde River. Last year we went kayaking up there for work, and oh my God, how many red-eared sliders did we see that day, Elizabeth?
A lot. Like, and I was thinking about this because one of our park rangers just pulled like a soft-shelled turtle out of Lake Havasu. And yeah, I think it's just, oh, I'm just going to let it go. It belongs outside. I'm just going to let it go. But it actually is doing some damage. So that's not the right answer. Is the right answer finding a sanctuary or like a rescue like yourselves? What should they do instead?
Yeah. So sometimes when people find turtles, it's like their next door neighbors, you know, they have a pond. And so it's good to look around and see if you can find the owner. And if you can't, that's what we're here for. We take those in.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, this has been great information. I could talk to you guys all day long. I can tell you have the world's most interesting stories. We have to do it again. Before we sign off today, is there anything coming up with the Phoenix Herpetological Sanctuary this year that people can be on the look for or maybe get involved in?
Sure. So I'll probably give a couple, and I'm sure Kale has some as well, but we're doing our first ever adoption event at the sanctuary next month. Yeah. So that's super exciting. On our website under the visit tab, we have all of our special events there. We do our nighttime croc walks during the summer. So you could come see some of the crocodilians get fed, which is so much fun. And then my favorite event is Gators and Ghouls, which is near Halloween, where you also can come see the crocodilians get fed, and we decorate the whole property for Halloween. So it's pretty awesome. It's a pretty good time.
Yeah, and I just want to add, during those croc walks and gators and ghouls, I'm going to be in the venom room feeding some of the world's most venomous snakes, and people can come and watch. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. If I was going to do that with anyone, it would be you, Kale. You have a very calming energy.
Yeah.
You know all the things. I'd stand next to you and watch that. Or maybe a few feet away from you.
Yeah.
It's behind glass, so you're good.
Wow, that's awesome.
Those sound like fun events. Where can people follow you, find more information, watch for these things coming up?
Sure. So we are on all platforms at Phoenix Herp. And then on our website, if you go to the bottom, we have an email sign up. So we send out an email about once a month, just kind of what's going on, what's new, and the most important, you know, events that are coming up. And those croc walks and gators and ghouls sell out super quick. So as soon as that email goes out, I always recommend getting a ticket.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. We will put information up about that too, and make sure that our listeners can find all these great things coming up. Thank you so much for sharing them with us.
Of course. You guys are awesome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Until next time.
See ya.
Bye.